This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for January 28, 2010. I'm Amy Brown. As we've reported previously on Radioactive, State Representative Jim Schatz has introduced legislation that is aimed at reducing abuses of solitary confinement in Maine's prisons. Today we take a closer look at the legislation, the reasons it was proposed, and why it has drawn widespread support from a growing diverse coalition of groups and individuals in the state. Prisoners on special management units, or SMUs, spend 23 to 24 hours a day in solitary confinement. LD 1611, an act to ensure humane treatment for special management prisoners, would, if passed, do several things to reduce abuses on the SMUs in Maine's prison. It would protect severely mentally ill prisoners from being placed there, require the discharge from the SMU of those who develop major mental illnesses while in solitary, restrict the use of restraints, chemical agents, and other corporal punishment, require a system of reviews and a need for justification for any long-term placement on the SMU, and prevent prison officials from transferring prisoners out of state if they were to be placed in prisons that still allow such abuses in other states. Emily Posner is with Mainers Against the Abuse of Solitary Confinement and was one of the organizers of this campaign.
It started with a simple letter that I wrote to Representative Jim Schatz after I read an article in The New Yorker called Hellhole by Dr. Tal Gawande, and actually started to myself begin to understand what are some of the very serious mental health and physical repercussions for people who are kept in solitary confinement for long periods of time. And so I simply wrote him a letter, and I sent him a copy of the article in which Maine is mentioned a few different times. And I said, you know, this is very upsetting to me, and I think we have an opportunity here to craft new policy and legislation that will reflect growing medical and as well as legal research that's demonstrating that has demonstrated some of the constitutional problems and due process problems with the use of long-term solitary confinement that will mirror what some of this new evidence is showing so that our democracy can continue to grow. And Jim was in support of it, and that's what got this ball rolling, and we started to bring a group of people from a variety of different perspectives and skill sets to the table in order to craft a bill that I'm very proud of that I think is very appropriate to the state of Maine, but also appropriate to some of this evidence that's been documented about the impacts of solitary confinement.
And since then, the coalition of different folks that are involved in this have gathered some testimony from some people who've been experienced the solitary confinement in Maine's prison firsthand.
Yeah, there's a group of people that have been working on gathering some of this testimony, and I know that the NAACP has been gathering, not just in regards to the personal impacts of what happens to people once they're in solitary confinement, but also just about what has been going on in the special management unit in the Maine State Prison and some of, some of the problems in its operations and really trying to get a good understanding of what is happening within that special management unit. So there's a variety of groups like the NAACP, Mainers Against the Abuse of Solitary Confinement, the Hancock County Jail Volunteers, and different people have been taking testimony, and we're really trying to piece together a good understanding from a prisoner's perspective of what's happening there.
Reverend Stan Moody is a former state legislator, former chaplain at the SMU at the Maine State Prison. He's the author of Crisis in Evangelical Scholarship and McChurched, 300 Million Served and Still Hungry, and also the author of several articles about his experiences on the SMU and in the Maine State Prison that have been published in the Village Soup. He currently serves as pastor at the Meeting House Church in Manchester, and he is one of the coalition members who is supporting LD 1611. Welcome to Radioactive, Reverend Moody.
Thank you for inviting me, Amy.
In an article you wrote in the Village Soup last month, you said, quote, "Solitary confinement is as close to a 19th century Charles Dickens novel as you can get." And you went on to quote Dickens himself after a visit to the Eastern State Penitentiary as saying, quote, "I believe it to be cruel and wrong. I hold this daily tampering with the mysteries of the brain to be immeasurably worse than any torture of the body," end quote. What have you personally witnessed with your experiences in Maine's prison system that reinforces these statements and encourages your support of LD 1611?
When I say that it's a 19th century prison culture or philosophy, it follows the history of a variety of prisons that began in the 19th century and were predicated on the idea that a punishment within the prison makes a person stronger or builds character. And we found that this actually does not work in a prison setting. These are people who have already failed in their self-esteem and their sense of self and worth is way down on the bottom. They've been punished a lot. So that's kind of the philosophy. That all went out by the time the early 70s rolled around, 1970s, that philosophy was pretty well gone. Now, basically, what I said there was a bit tongue-in-cheek because I was really shedding light on the fact that they have this incredible facility over there, which is inconsistent with the way things are done.
Meaning incredible in terms of it being ultra-modern and...
Ultra-modern and efficient. Efficient is the word. I mean, everything moves in a highly efficient manner.
So what specifically have you seen that raises your concerns? You mentioned the numbers of people, you mentioned the amount of time that the people who are in the SMU spend there. Can you talk about that length of time and what that does to people that you've actually personally met?
Yeah, I was actually looking at the policy. I raised this issue with the administration while I was there, that they weren't following policy, they weren't following the law. And I'm looking at some of the policy. It's actually policy number 20-0.1 from the Department of Corrections, and they have a maximum incarceration of 30 days for disciplinary action. Well, I've seen people in there for 2 years, and most of the time it just kind of lumbers on. They call discipline time a D time, and usually it's a 30-day sentence. I've seen people in there for 100 days on a 30-day D time. I think that that's where the philosophy comes. I think there's this sense that if we make it tough on people, and again, we've had this a revival of this sort of thinking in the last 20 years with the contract with America and so forth, is the idea that we get tough on crime and we make it tough on people, they won't come back. Well, actually, that is not borne out by the data. There are arguments on the other side, however, and there's something that you should be very aware of, and we're just starting to discover this. The argument against this bill, 1611, is going to come from the department, and they're going to claim that there's no data that indicates that people in segregation are suffering from mental illness and psychological illness. They're splitting hairs between the term solitary confinement and the term segregation. They're now talking about the very few people who are in solitary confinement, and the way that solitary confinement is defined is that you have no contact with anybody other than somebody shoving food through a slot.
And what's the difference? What's segregation?
Segregation.
Like?
You can talk to the guy who's in the cell next door, and you can watch what's going on as the guards go up and down, and you can ask them questions. Quite a stark difference. There are some who say there is no difference, and if you look at the MCLU talking points, they tackle this very well. They define solitary confinement as segregation, supermax, the whole, and special management unit, which is the politically correct term that's now being used at Maine State Prison.
So have you talked with and worked with some of these folks that have been placed there and seen any deterioration in their mental health or their sociological deterioration in terms of, like, the impact that it has on how they interact with other people once they're out?
Well, we have a lot of information with regard to some of the folks that have been interviewed over the years. Yes, I went cell door to cell door once a week. I would see maybe as many as 60 or 70. By the way, the department will tell you that there are only 2% in so-called solitary confinement. That would be 20. There are customarily over 100 at any one given time there. In segregation, if you want to define segregation as part of solitary confinement. And yes, banging of the head, setting off the sprinkler system, going semi-berserk, that's a very common occurrence. Whether it is worse if you're in a cell where you have no contact with anybody, that's the question that has to be answered. And whether this would qualify as under the studies that have been done, that's the question that has to be answered as well. So, yeah, I got to know these guys over a long period of time. Some of them were capable of handling many, many months in that kind of status. Most of the time, however, even those who were capable of handling it would be high-risked at one time or another. If you were on the C pod, where the less severe inmates were, and there were a few more liberties, C wing, I should say, of SMU. SMU has three wings, by the way, and we can get into that a little bit. But if you were on that C wing, and you cut up, or you went off the deep end somehow psychologically, you would likely go back to B1, which is the worst of the worst, and or over to the mental health wing, which is the A wing.
So, yes, why don't you describe the units a little bit more and explain why B1 is the worst of the worst?
Okay. The best way to describe it, and it has to draw it out, you're interestingly enough, there are a lot of people who are involved with this who have never been inside the prison. They're very careful to keep these folks out, including reporters. But there are three wings there. The A wing is divided into two parts. One is the severely mentally ill. It's called A1. And the other is less mentally ill, and they have quite a bit of freedom. That's A2. There are probably 16 cells in each of those two units. Everything is behind double-locked doors, as you can imagine. The B wing is where most of the disciplinary actions go initially. B1 corridor, all three wings have two stories, two banks of cells. The B1 corridor is the downstairs corridor, and it's the worst of the worst. The most incorrigible inmates are put there. If you cut up or you do something during while you're at the special management unit, they'll put you down there, and then you have to graduate way back up again. You go from B1 to B2 to C1 to C2, and then on out to general population.
So does it start with the lower, so to speak, levels being the most restrictive in terms of interactions?
Yes.
And getting outside and stuff?
Yes. B1, there's a lot of noise down there. There are... communication and exchanges between inmates is done through a fishing line where they actually get pretty skilled at tossing things from one cell to another underneath the doors. The recreation area is in, how would you describe it? It's in almost like a cell type of thing. It's a runway. So you're by yourself. There's nobody in there with you, as opposed to the C wing, which you can, you got several people out there, and you can play basketball and that kind of thing. There are people that wind up in B1 for long periods of time, and I would guess, I'm not a psychologist, but my guess is that that the reason they do that is because they have sort of flipped out in the process, become very, very difficult to manage.
One of the things that the LD-1611 would prohibit is use of corporal punishment. Is it really necessary? Do we need a law prohibiting that? Is that actually used fairly frequently in the SMU?
There's most of what you hear about corporal punishment is in the area of rumor. What goes on there at night? I've had inmates tell me that there's some screaming at night, whether that's from somebody being injured, I don't know. But they do have instances where three or four guards will have to subdue somebody, and they'll open the door and come in with a shield, and they use a lot of mace. That also is being prohibited under the provision of the law, if you recall. I think that it would be very difficult to pin that down. Obviously, it's something that no one sees. But there's another kind of abuse, isn't there? And that is to view the residents as somehow subhuman. And I think that's even worse than a physical abuse might be. There's a 58% return rate or recidivism rate among prisoners, and I use recidivism to include both reoffense and probation violation. But there's 58%. That's slightly less than the national average, which is up around 65%. So we don't find any evidence of whatever we're doing down there is working. You've got a lot of guards down there who have GEDs themselves, don't have the skills, the social skills, and they also come there with a lot of stereotypical assumptions about people and looking at a prisoner as somebody subhuman is the first big mistake that's made. The fact is, if you go in there with this attitude that prisoners are some sort of inferior human being or some inferior being, you're going to treat them that way.
You have a website, stanmoody.com. Is that a good place for people to go to read more about this?
That would be great.
All right, as well as villagesoup.com.
Yep.
Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you, Amy.
That's the Reverend Stan Moody. Alicia Melnick is with the Maine Civil Liberties Union.
There's growing research that shows that prolonged isolation for some, especially those with mental illness or serious mental illness, to torture, and therefore we believe it's in violation of basic human rights, international treaties, and the principles of the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. And we think that Maine can be a leader in this area by addressing the growing research and awareness of the significant and permanent damage that can be done by this practice. At mclu.org, there's a page dedicated to this bill, and there's links to a number of psychological and constitutional research around this practice. We just think that the overuse and the abuse of solitary confinement can lead to really damaging outcomes, both for prisoners, for the guards and staff who must supervise those prisoners, and for the communities that must welcome them home upon their release. We think it's expensive, it's not good public policy, and that, again, Maine has an opportunity to lead and reform in this area where we have, you know, a growing body of research on how to better manage prisoners with these issues.
Sheila Comerford is the Executive Director of the Maine Psychological Association, another organization that is supporting LD 1611.
The Maine Psychological Association has decided to throw our support behind LD 1611, because the negative effects of extended solitary confinement on the psychological well-being of individuals has been well documented by psychologists recently. Dr. Craig Hanley, who is a psychologist at the University of California, did extensive research with the practice of putting prisoners in solitary confinement, and his study was done with 100 randomly selected inmates at a supermax prison in California. And what he found is that prisoners in what they call special management units, which is solitary confinement, often lose their ability to initiate behavior on their own. So they lose the ability to organize their lives around an activity, and chronic apathy, lethargy, depression, and even despair can result. Two researchers at the University of North Carolina, Bruce Arrigo and Jennifer Bullock, have also studied the negative effects of this type of confinement.
There will be a public hearing on LD 1611, an act to ensure humane treatment for special management prisoners, on Wednesday, February 17th at the State Legislature's Criminal Justice Committee in Augusta. You can go to our website, weru.org, and along with the archives of today's program, we will put a link for the bill, or you can just do a search for LD 1611, which once again was sponsored by Representative Jim Schatz of Blue Hill. And if you'd like to hear a firsthand account of life, several years of life in solitary confinement, former prisoner Robert King, who is one of the Angola Three, will be coming to Portland to speak about his experience in solitary confinement in Louisiana for 29 years before he was released when a court found him probably innocent. He'll be speaking at the First Parish Church in Portland on Congress Street at 7 o'clock on Wednesday, February 10th. And that's Radioactive for today. Radioactive is a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Amy Brown. Meredith DeFrancesco will be back with us next week. You can contact us by emailing news@weru.org. And you can find our archived programs and links for our guests on the website weru.org. Thanks for listening and acting, and stay tuned for more independent media made possible with your support here on your community radio station, WERU. We've ended Radioactive a bit early today to bring you this tribute to the late, great Howard Zinn.
I was a politically aware young person reading about fascism and the Spanish Civil War and Hitler and Mussolini. And so I wanted to go fight against fascism. So I
volunteered for the Air Force.
I was in the Air Force for 2.5 years and dropped bombs on Berlin, dropped bombs on various cities in Germany, and even bombed a little town in France. And this was a strange one, and one that had a very profound effect on me later as I thought about it. And the war actually in Europe was about over. It was a few weeks from being over, and everybody knew it. They told us we were going to bomb this little town in France because there were several thousand German soldiers around the town. They weren't doing anything, weren't bothering anyone. They were just waiting for the war to end, but we were going to go over and bomb them. Of course, later I learned this was napalm, the first use of napalm in the European theater. And you know, when you're bombing from 30,000 feet, you don't hear anything, you don't see anything, you don't know what's happening to people down there. You don't hear people screaming, you don't see blood, you don't see mangled limbs, none of that. And several thousand people were killed. Germans were killed, French were killed, and it wasn't until really after the war, maybe after I learned about Hiroshima and Nagasaki and began to think about bombing and began to question the total goodness of the good war, only then did I go think about Royan and that bombing.
Sleeping on a pillow of solid rock.
I thought about my own experience in the Air Force, and it was very clear to me, looking around at all these guys around me who were dropping bombs and who were killing people, that did not come from inside.
It did not come from, oh, God, how good it would be to kill some people today. You know, there was no urge to kill, even though they were the enemy. No, what it came from was simply we had been trained. And also we had been told it's a good war. We'd been told we're the good guys, they're the bad guys. Wars don't take place out of the rush of a population demanding war. It isn't the population that demands war, it's the leaders who demand war and who prepare the population for war.
Where there's a fight against the blood and hatred in the air.
So it then became very important for me to knock down, to argue against that idea whenever I could.
A lot of people are troubled
by civil disobedience. As soon as you talk about committing civil disobedience, they get a little upset. That's exactly the purpose of civil disobedience, to upset people, to trouble them, to disturb them. We who commit civil disobedience are disturbed too, and we mean to disturb those who are in charge of the war. And so, let the spirit of disobedience spread to the war factories, to the battlefield, to the halls of Congress, every town and city, until the killing stops, until we can hold up our heads again before the world. Because our children deserve a world without war, and we ought to try to give them that.
Voices of the people who've been overlooked in the traditional history books. We didn't want to hear the words of the people in the White House. We wanted to hear the words of people who were picketing the White House. Agitators, the anti-war protesters, the socialists and anarchists. In other words, the people who gave us whatever liberty and democracy we have in this country.
We should be questioning the larger principle involved, and that is, should the United States be sending troops anywhere in the world, whether it's Afghanistan, Iraq, or anywhere else, should we think we can solve any problems with military solutions? The Iraqis don't want us in Iraq, that's clear. The American people don't want us in Iraq. It's a continuation of the whole idea of U.S. Military dominance in the world, which we should do everything we can to bring to an end.
Democracy is in dissent. Democracy is in resistance. Democracy doesn't come from the top, it comes from the bottom.
For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Oh, what's going on? Yeah.
This was produced by Esther Manila of Pacifica Station KPFA.